Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Freedom is Normal, where we take a look at the nation's oldest reform organization for marijuana laws, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. And today we are joined by the founder of the organization. Keith Straup is talking to us from his home in Virginia. Keith, welcome back to the program.
Nice to be with you, Russ. I'm actually at the Normal office today.
Oh, you're in D.C. today. Yeah. Fantastic. Okay.
Yeah, downtown D.C.
So it's been such a remarkable run in the 45 plus years that Normal's been in existence, beginning with the decriminalization that was passed in the 70s in numerous states. And now we've just achieved our first state to pass legalization through its legislature. And that's where I wanted to start our interview, Keith, is to get your perspective on where we're headed now, because we've kind of picked the low hanging fruit when it comes to marijuana states, as far as the Californias and Oregons and Massachusetts, where we have the initiative power and we have a lot of control over how we're going to legalize. Now, as we move to these legislative states, we see examples like, well, Vermont, which is done like D.C. and had a no commercial sales sort of legalization. And then we look over to New Jersey, where they're proposing no home grow sort of situation like what Washington State has. Do you think the arc of legalization gets more restrictive as we start passing in some more of these states, or does the inevitable arc bend toward more freedom as more states become legal?
Well, unfortunately, I think it's the former, not the latter. First off, it's important for your listeners to realize that half of the states do not offer a voter initiative as an option for changing public policy. So it's important that we've reached this phase, and we certainly are there now. Vermont was the first state to legalize marijuana legislative instead of by the initiative. And as I say, the reason that's important conceptually is, of course, it opens up half the country that otherwise we can't legalize marijuana because they don't offer the initiative process. Now, what people have to be aware of, and you're going to see more and more of this, is that when you have to move a public policy proposal through a state legislature, it does in fact involve compromise. Always, even if you've got a fairly supportive majority in the legislature that favor legalization, there are going to be some reefer maniacs in that legislature. And there's going to be a governor now and then that gets cold feet, and like in Massachusetts, that wants to limit the legalization. So I think initially the first few states that we win legislatively, we're probably going to have fairly conservative versions of legalization. Like you mentioned, it may be more like Washington State, where they did not allow cultivation, than it would be like Colorado or California or some of the others. On the other hand, I don't think we should look at this as a single step. In Vermont, as you mentioned, what they actually have done is they've adopted a system that's almost identical to the one we have here in the District of Columbia. In D.C., our city council wants to license commercial growers and retailers, but the Congress won't allow it. They put a rider on our appropriations bill, and they do not let us, for the moment, legalize recreational marijuana in the sense that we can establish stores where people can go buy it. Now, we have five retail outlets for medical marijuana, but for some reason, they won't allow us to do it yet on recreation. So what that means is, you're making a fairly strong statement that there's nothing wrong with smoking marijuana, and yet the people are going to either have to grow it themselves, which most people don't really have the expertise to do or don't want to spend the time to do, or they have to buy it on the black market. And I don't think that's a sustainable policy. I think in the long run, one of the major arguments in favor of legalization is to get rid of the black market, at least to minimize the black market, and to bring it above ground. But again, in Vermont, they didn't have the courage to do that. They simply legalized the possession and cultivation of marijuana, but they did not license commercial growers and sellers, so they have a system sort of like we do. Again, it's a magnificent major step forward, but it is not a sustainable long-term policy.
Which of the two options do you have more issue with, the no home grow or the no commercial sales? Which one's more troubling to you?
Well, I frankly have always felt that the right to grow your own marijuana is a terribly important concept, because what it does is, even though most of us who smoke may not choose to spend the time and energy to grow our own marijuana, just the fact that we have the legal right to do that assures that the market is going to be somewhat responsive to our needs. If they try to sell us marijuana, for example, that's not high quality, we're not going to buy it. We'll grow our own. If they try to charge us too much for the marijuana, we're not going to pay it. We're going to grow our own. So I guess what I would say, I would rather start off, if you have to make that choice, with the right to grow your own, because I'm reasonably comfortable that within 3 or 4 years, those elected officials are going to realize that, yes, legalization is better than prohibition, but full legalization, where you license commercial growers and retailers, is far superior to having your consumers depend on the black market.
You know, speaking of the black market, that's one of the angles that our opponents have seized on in the states that have legalized, is that a black market still exists, that it didn't get eliminated, although it may have been reduced. I haven't seen any specific numbers on that or anything. But in response to that, in response to these guys that say, you know, oh, yeah, the big marijuana is coming, it's going to be big tobacco 2.0. It's addiction for profit. It's a commercialized addiction. How do you respond to that and convince the people that no, this is the way to go?
Well, for one thing, if you look at the first four states that have legalized and have a little bit of a track record, one of the common themes that run throughout those legalized systems is the price for legal marijuana begins to drop fairly dramatically. Even the first few months, it usually remains sort of at black market levels. But fairly quickly, it begins to drop, and drop significantly. In several of the states now, marijuana is less than half of what it cost before it was legalized. And again, it seems to be continuing to drop in price. That's a good thing, I think. That's not a bad thing. I think, you know, we live in a free market system. I think what's important is that we avoid those type of legalization systems where they limit the number of producers or retail outlets. For example, in Florida, where I think they only initially started off with only 5 commercial growers were allowed to grow marijuana for the entire state for their medical system. Well, you can imagine that's a monopoly where those guys are going to take advantage of people. Whereas in states like Colorado, where they don't have a limit on the number of commercial growers or retail outlets, what happens is the free market over a period of time begins to work its will. Now, there will be some people who don't make it. In other words, the lure of the green rush can be a little bit of a fool's errand if you're not careful. I think everybody thought, my, we're legalizing marijuana, we're all going to get rich. No, in fact, a fairly significant number of those new businesses are likely to fail because there's a lot of competition. That's the way the free market is supposed to work. So, I feel badly for anybody who invested their money and then the business doesn't work. But again, I'd rather have the market determine how many people are in business than I would have the legislature limiting the number of licenses, because once you do that, then you have a monopoly and they obviously can set the price wherever they want.
Well, the perfect example of that happening is right up here where I'm at in the Pacific Northwest, particularly in Oregon, where we don't have any limits on total number of licenses for producers or retailers or processors. And the complaint I'm hearing from, you know, a lot of people who've been in the marijuana business for a while, be it licit, medical, or illicit, the complaint is there's a glut. There's far too much production. They can't even get $500 a pound wholesale for their cannabis when they had been used to getting like around 2000. And this is even leading some to call for some policy changes, call for limits on licensing, calling for production caps or canopy limits. How do we talk to those people within our own cadre, within our own group of people, the cannabis community, that are seeing legalization as a threat to their economic livelihood?
Well, I think that is a legitimate concern that all of us should be paying attention to, and that is that we don't want to see the industry totally taken over by big marijuana. We don't want to have, you know, multi-billion-dollar corporations coming in and controlling things. We want to make sure that those courageous individuals who for decades have taken felony risks to grow and supply marijuana to the millions of us who smoked when it was still illegal and still terribly dangerous for them to do that, we should reward them by making sure that they have a niche of the market that they can make a go of it, that they can stay in business but come above ground and pay taxes and be licensed. So one way you do that, the most creative thing I've seen so far in the California system, they actually adopted a proposal where for the first 5 years of legalization, they would have a limit of, I believe it's 1 acre of canopy for the largest grow operation anyone could have. Therefore, even if you were had unlimited resources, you still could only have 1 acre of canopy, and therefore there was guaranteed that the small and mid-sized grower would be able to compete. And then at the end of the first 5 years, hopefully we'd take a look at it, and if they need a little more protection for a few more years, one presumes the legislature would provide that. But hopefully by that point, there are enough of those small and mid-sized producers that are doing well and have a healthy business, and they won't need the protection any longer. Now, having said that, the greed of the green rush always rears its ugly head, and already there's a problem in California with four or five fairly major players out there. Instead of being satisfied to have their one-acre canopy of marijuana, they've taken advantage of a bit of a loophole in which there's no actual prohibition that says you cannot have more than one license. There is a clear intent that they didn't want people producing more than this acre of canopy, but they should have said, and nobody can have more than one license. So the result is you now have a number of the players, including some of the major players that we've known for years, like Harborside Health. I think they had like 11 different licenses now. And so they're avoiding the very control mechanism that the legislature intended to give the small and mid-sized producer a chance to have a place in the market. So again, you know, we're always, in any time you're dealing with a new industry, you're going to have some people who simply get carried away with their greed, and we certainly have our share of that as well.
You know, that's reminiscent of Oregon's medical marijuana program, where we had growers that were engaged in what was called card stacking, which was getting a whole bunch of patient cards for one address and then being able to grow six plants for every single one of those cards. And the blowback on that is still being felt today with restrictions on the medical program as far as how many plants they can grow, whether they can grow in the city, and so forth. Do you think there's going to be a blowback in California to these people that are, you know, stacking these licenses, as you described?
Yes. In fact, there's a lawsuit that has been filed. There's a, I forget now the precise name, but there's a growers association from California that has already filed suit alleging that what they're doing is precluded. And of course, we don't know how the suit's going to come out, but I'm certainly hopeful they're going to win that. And if they do, then at least we have this first 5-year period where the small and mid-sized producer has a fair chance to make it.